Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. The website is musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. If you are on one of the streaming platforms and feel so inclined, give us some stars, give us a review, give us some feedback. We would love to get some love, get us higher up there. We did get, as you know, one of the top career podcasts of 2018. Whoop, whoop. So we're really grateful for that, but obviously would love to get the word out so more people can find out about our podcast and we can help more people looking for careers in music. Again, as you know, we are all about talking to the movers and shakers and innovators in the music business, telling us all about their careers, how they got that music job, what obstacles they overcome, what decisions they had to make, what advice and insight would they give to the rest of us. So really, really good. Go on back and check out the earlier episodes. And last week, I interviewed Joshua DeCaney. He is a professional percussionist. He has played basically around the world. He's played with Peter Cetera of Chicago and Aretha Franklin. And he talks about making the most of opportunities wherever you are. Really getting out there and hustling. You don't have to be in New York City. You don't have to be in Los Angeles. You can make opportunities happen right where you are. So really great discussion with him and a lot of great insights. So I urge you to go on back and listen to that if you haven't done so already. Okay, I'm very pleased to introduce my next guest, Hunter Scott. He's the co-founder of the full-service music PR and branding firm La Famos, which actually just celebrated 10 years. Hunter is very well known in the industry and he is very sought after as a speaker and panelist for multiple music and entertainment conferences and events all over the world. So I am really thrilled that I got to snag him for our little podcast. He has served on the faculty of Musicians Institute. He is also himself a singer-songwriter and guitarist, so he basically knows every aspect of the biz. He is going to walk us through how he got started, what he has learned along the way, and just some great insights and career advice all about PR, marketing, advertising, etc. But before we do that, let's play a favorite track of Hunter's. It's called Sober Up by AJR.
Won't you help me sober up? Growing up, it made me numb. And I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me sober up? All the big kids, they got drunk. And I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me feel something again?
How's it going again?
Hey Hunter, thank you so much for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Awesome, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always kind of like to start from the beginning, just hearing about my guests' first exposure to music. Like, you know, when they were growing up, was there a lot of music in the household? Did they have like first kind of pop stars or bands they were really into, that kind of thing?
I think the main music in the household was actually classical. My parents are obsessed with classical music, and that was the main thing they were playing. But my older sisters, about 2 years older than I am, had a different obsession, and that was KISS FM here in LA. Mm-hmm. And we had one of those stereos with a couple of cassettes in there. So she would record music and essentially make mixtapes for me. She would record music from the radio. That was the main way that we would kind of build our collection until we started purchasing CDs. I would say, and today I really do appreciate a lot more kinds of music. Back then it was mainly more of that kind of mainstream stuff, and especially I didn't think classical was cool because my parents were into it. Mm-hmm. But that was, I would say, my first exposure to music and really kind of falling in love was pretty much anything my older sister would record for me.
So when did you kind of realize, like, hey, I actually want to do this? Like, I want to play, I want to sing, I want to write.
I've always been a little bit obsessive with music in a sense where it created a lot of emotions for me when I would listen to it. I would want to listen to it when I was super happy, when I was super sad, you know, in terms of different kinds of music. It just became, I always felt like music was a great soundtrack to my life and a great complement to emotion. But it wasn't until early high school when a friend of mine picked up the guitar and started playing that I was like, oh, this is really, really cool. We would sit down and just, he would play and I would sing a little bit. And then very, very quickly afterwards, I wanted to get a guitar as well and started playing. So that was my first kind of foray into that. And fast forward from there, I was never, for some reason, I could never get the songs that I probably just was never good enough, but I could never get the songs to sound exactly the way I wanted it, which is how I started writing music on my own. Because I figured if I can make, you know, my playing sound just like what it sounds like on the radio, which obviously is a very naive thing to think, because obviously you can't, then, you know, I was just going to make my own music that I don't have to worry about what it's going to sound like. And that's kind of how I started writing music.
Oh, very cool. So all self-taught, you didn't take any formal lessons or anything?
Very, very, very little, just in the beginning, just enough to get me through playing Oasis a tiny bit. That was it.
Mm-hmm. I love Oasis. That's like always a good inspiration.
It's just a very easy, you know, chord progression stuff to get you started, learn a little chords.
Yep, exactly. So did you have any aspirations? Were you like, I really want to take this as far as I can? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I definitely for a little bit wanted to really just pursue music. I you know, became from being obsessive with like listening to music all the time to just really wanting to play and write. And I would do that for hours a day. And so very early on, I realized that in order to do that and do that well, I needed to really understand the business aspects of it. So I can, because I knew you have to promote yourself and you have to really get out there. So I snuck into some music business classes at the local college here, at MI. I snuck into some music business classes over there and did the, this is kind of a funny story how this happened, but I pretended to be a student and the instructor picked up on that I wasn't really there, but she didn't mind. And so I would just hand in the homework and do everything as if I was enrolled. And at the end of the semester, the final project was to write a marketing plan. And I submitted marketing plan for that. And she called me. I had no idea how she even was able to reach me, but she called me back and asked to see me, and I thought I was in trouble. And instead she said, this is the best marketing plan I've ever seen a student give me, and you're not even enrolled in this class. You're missing the mark. You need to study music business. And so, you know, my response was, I've already been studying. I thought I've done with my college studies, and I definitely am, especially in a private college. It's really expensive, and I have no money. And she said, give me a day, and then go talk to the guy over there. And she pointed at, you know, the office of the head of the music business program, and said, just come back tomorrow and talk to him. And when I did come back the next day, he knew who I was, and he said he's heard great things. And as long as I promised to, you know, make him proud and work my ass off, they were going to take care of me. And they did, to the tune of giving me a complete full ride scholarship to the entire program. And they overflooded. Someone from that school has heard me talk about this before and asked me not to say it, but I will anyway because I think it's cool. Because I don't know if they did it on purpose or not. I think back then they did, but they weren't supposed to. They overflooded my account. So essentially I ended up not just having my school paid for, but I also got my rents paid for because I got checks from them. So I had my rent paid for as well, which was really nice. And I went through the program. Obviously, I finished with, you know, that 4.0 and did well and got a gig at Interscope from there and fell in love with the whole music business side. And I was kind of the end of my musical career as a performer because I discovered that I was so much better at kind of doing the music business side, but also I felt more fulfilled because there was less of the stress of being on a stage, which now when I speak at conferences, I enjoy doing, but performing on stage was never something I felt 100% comfortable with. So yeah, it's a combination of being really good at something and also being fulfilled to the tune of being able to work on multiple campaigns, which enables you to be creative on many different fronts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that's amazing. You obviously already know this, but that's a very unique approach. Like, it's not a very common thing for artists to be like, I really need to learn music business, right? Like they're
Which
all
is
like
probably how I knew that eventually I would end up on the business side, because I knew early on the business side is really, really important. That's what it was. And a couple of years later, the same guy that gave me the scholarship called me, and again, I was like, what have I done now? Because I'm not a troublemaker, so there's really no reason. But he called me in and said, sit down, and basically offered me a teaching gig. And that's how I became a college instructor. It's basically him saying, you've done really well. You now have a company. I mean, again, fast forward a couple of years, I had a company that was doing well. And they thought it was a good idea for me to come and teach what I do and potentially inspire the students. That would see this is something I, you know, all the music business studies came from that school. So to go back and teach digital marketing and write the course, that was a cool thing. They let me completely rewrite the course for digital marketing and for social media marketing class. That was a great experience.
Yeah. Can we back up a little bit? I just want to hear a little bit about Interscope. Did you intern there? Was it an internship?
I was an internship there. Ton of fun. I was really fortunate enough to be in the marketing department, so I could be like really in the nitty gritty of things. It was overall really a fantastic experience.
And you would recommend that, yeah, internships, like as soon as you can?
As many as you can, as soon as you can. I would just recommend internships that you actually get to do real work. So Interscope, like I said, I was really fortunate and I was able to be in the marketing department and really do things and see how everything really worked. Friends of mine that were in the mailroom were not fortunate enough. I don't think they, you know, again, with internship experience, you can take as much as you can get out of it, but at the end of the day, you want to position yourself in a situation where you are close to the people you can even learn from and make connections that's going to help you down the line as well. That's also, you know, an important thing in your trajectory. So I would say, yeah, focus on that. And the recommendations I usually would give my students later on was maybe get a couple different internships, at least one at a smaller company. Like we're considered a medium firm, right? I have 10 people on payroll. We accept three interns at a time for a venture program. So that really enables them to learn from, like, be directly involved with the campaigns, help with the pitching, help with the, the nitty gritty of it without doing any of the BS work. So there's never getting anybody coffee or anything like that. But then you could also get one that is in a larger firm, just because sometimes, you know, people like having that on the resume. But at the end of the day, the internship is a learning experience, and you want to make sure you're learning and getting the skills you need in order to be able to give you kind of a leg up over everybody else when it comes time to look for a job. So that's the reason we built our internship program specifically in a way where we feel students are able to get a job as a junior publicist right after college, you know, right when they're ready to do that, because we've given them the tools that they can write on the resume and say, we have pitched media outlets, we have helped manage social media accounts, all those things. So they really have the real life experience that you eventually want to do. So yeah, going back to that question, that is the type of experience, no matter what company you're going for, you should be looking at is getting the tools that you need. Because the real life versus what you often learn in college, as far as the kind of the theory of it, they are not necessarily always aligned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the other thing is, and I've heard a couple of my guests say this, is that don't just because you got an internship, don't just sit on your butt. Like you have to get in, you have to hustle. You have to get in people's faces, like make sure they know who you are. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I have tons of experiences on that. I would go and network as much as I could with people that were working there. I would ask them how they got their jobs. One time they were like, you know, we're kind of slow, and it was 3 p.m. and I was kind of slow, you can just go home. And I said, no, I'm just going to sit over here. And when you find stuff for me, and within 20 minutes, there was something came in and they're like, oh, Hunter can do it. And I was doing that until probably 7 or 8 p.m. that evening. And I think people also like that because you're showing that you're motivated, but it's not to kiss ass. It's more to just actually be interested genuinely and learn from everything around you. One of the internship coordinators at the school at the time, when I was teaching, I would talk to her once in a while, and she would tell me these stories about how she had two interns, two students doing internship in the same department at the same label. And one would come back to her and be like, this is the best thing ever. I'm learning so much. And the other one came right after and said, this is a horrible internship. I have not learned anything.
Oh my God.
You know, can I do a different one? And she's like, you're sitting next to each other. How is this possible? And that's a great lesson. And you can really get a lot out of it, or you can get nothing out of it, depending on how much you're, you know, you're willing and able to do.
Right. And your perception and your attitude and everything else. Like, I think that's the thing. This isn't like, this isn't make-believe. Like, this is exactly like being in a real job, and you have to treat it that way. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk about, and this is kind of my favorite part with marketing and PR, et cetera, and obviously more about your career trajectory, but about creativity and about how it is so important and how it is so intrinsic to marketing yourself, promoting yourself, et cetera.
Wow. That's a kind of a loaded question.
How much time do we have? I just love to hear, like, obviously you already have a creative trajectory. You know what I mean? Like the fact that you like took a class without even being enrolled, and, you know, your creativity was kind of starting out early. And did you see that kind of the necessity to really be creative and to have a different approach to, you know, getting what you want, putting yourself out there, you know, promoting yourself, marketing yourself, that kind of thing?
I think it's more of a matter of, yeah, you build the connections you need moving forward. Mm-hmm. But you also, it goes back to what I was saying before about kind of learning along the way and maybe thinking a little bit outside the box. If you do the same thing like everybody else, you're not going to stand out.
Yeah.
So I did that when I was in school. I did that when I was kind of building my business. And the way that we do things today and the type of people that I hire onto the company, I look for great passion for music because it always starts there. But we also want to make sure that we're getting people who are able to think outside the box, that they understand that different is better, because you live in a world where you have so much music and so many musicians, and our job is to get our clients to be seen and heard above, you know, other people, because it's such a crowded field. And you can't do that by just, you know, writing a press release and blasting it out. That's like the big thing. I think you heard me speak about at ASCAP Expo as well. You know, do things that would make you stand out and that would reach the right people in order to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. So continue kind of walking us through your trajectory. So after Interscope, were you teaching, or was that something later?
No, so that came later. So after Interscope, I started my company.
And what made you decide to do that? What made you decide to start your own company?
That's another funny story. The kind of the main thing, I guess my aha moment was there was a remix vinyl that had come out for Robin. And I needed to go downstairs and mail it to the DJ, I believe he was in Australia, that I'd done the remix. And I mailed one the day earlier. So I went back downstairs to the mailroom, and I wanted to mail it, and the bubble wrap was gone. And the people in the mailroom said, oh, all the people that got laid off took it to pack their stuff. That was my aha moment of, wait a second, I'd much rather control my own destiny than wait for someone to essentially decide, oh, we're in a recession, there are going to be layoffs, and so forth. So, yeah, I went back upstairs, and I basically looked at myself when I moved back to L.A. and said, I came here with a 6-string, a 12-string, and a suitcase, and I had a dream of doing music. Now I'm going to put myself in shoes of that other, you know, of that me in a different world, in a parallel universe, if you will. What are the things that I need to do in order to help that person? And everything I've done to this day, we just turned 10 on May 1st. Everything I've done in the last 10 years has been specifically geared toward helping and empowering other musicians. So I did that. And about 2 years into the company, when, like I said, we were already doing well and I had employees working for me, that's when I got the call to come and teach. And that was specifically, that was my Mondays. So I never fully did that, you know, full time. I never wanted to do it full time. I just did that as my Monday. Actually, I started with one class and I made my way to five. So at some point I was teaching 10 hours a week, which was way, way too much. And as soon as I did that first semester, I asked to pull back down and I pulled it to 4 hours and eventually back to 2 hours. And then a couple of years ago, that was even too much because it was interfering with my schedule of going and speaking at conferences nationwide. And I felt like I needed a little bit of a break too. I did that for 6 years. So I stopped doing that. I was voted in to be on the board of directors for the Musicians Foundation, which is the nonprofit arm that gives scholarships for music business education, or not just music business, but for music education. Mm-hmm. So I'm still involved, and that's, you know, obviously a great honor and a really fun thing to be part of. Yeah, that's pretty much the kind of the timeline of things.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit, though, a little bit more about starting your own business? Because that does take, and especially for, you know, indie DIY people listening, you know, you definitely need a certain drive, a certain hustle. And could you possibly, yeah, just walk us through kind of the first days of that business and what you kind of did? Did you come up with a plan? Did you already have clients? Like, how did that all begin?
So there was, while I was studying music business, there was a musician that approached me and said, and he was actually a TA there. And he said, hey, I'm in a band. Do you want to help me like get some college gigs? And I was like, sure. And I did that and called up some college radio stations and campus activities specifically for colleges. And I guess I had more success doing it, you know, for him than he had doing it for himself. And then he planted the seed by saying, you're really good at this. You should start your own company. And I was like, nah, no, well, you know, maybe one day. And he's like, no, you should really do it. Let me know. I'll be like, you know, I'll let me know where to sign. If you do it, I'll be your first client. So fast forward to me deciding I was going to start my own business. I gave him a call and he immediately said, where do I sign? How much money? We're good to go.
Wow.
And I eventually launched the company with a client already, knowing that, you know, he was doing that. And that gave me enough word of mouth. So he, within the first month already, he told his friend, another like singer, like, hey, look at what Hunter is doing for me. He could do the same for you. And she signed on board. And then like a week later, he was like, hey, my friends are playing at this place. It's called the Derby in Las Vegas. It no longer exists. He's like, my friends are playing at Derby. I should go check them out and talk to them. I told them about you. And I went, they were fantastic. And I told them and they knew who I was based on that. And by the end of the month, I had three clients just based on that. And they kind of grew from there.
That's great. That's great. And so did you kind of start the business? I think I read like out of your kitchen table.
And yeah. The breakfast nook.
Yeah.
I was renting a house where there was a 5-bedroom house in Hollywood with a guest house that had 2 other people. So it was 7 people on the property.
Wow.
So it was a lot of people, but it was still like a fairly nice house. It was just, you know, the rent was split so many ways that we managed to make it happen. And we had the breakfast nook, which had boxes and just things that had been there for a long time. We didn't know where they had come from, I think. They may have been like previous roommates. When I had the idea of the company and I knew I had to, you know, do it with very, very, very little money, I essentially approached my roommates and I said, hey, if you let me clear out the breakfast nook and put a couple of desks in there and run like this little operation out of, in return, I will hire a cleaning lady to clean the common areas twice a month, and I'll pay for the internet. And they thought it was an amazing deal, and it was a win-win situation all around. I went to IKEA, I got a couple of cheap desks, I set it up, and that was it.
Awesome.
So we did that for the first, I think it was 7 months before I had enough capital to go and get some office space and move into an office space on Hollywood Boulevard where we are today. We just took over a little bit more than half the building by now, but we're still in the same spot that we originally moved into.
That's so cool. So talk to me about that. Like, how does one build a successful music PR firm? If you can somehow, you know, be brief or relatively brief about that.
I think there are two aspects to it. One is there's a very simple logistical thing about a PR firm, and I just want to be really upfront about that for people who are like, oh, because a lot of people are like, oh, we don't have a management firm. The difference between managers and booking agents versus and even labels versus PR firms and attorneys is because attorneys and publicists, we work on a retainer, so we get paid for our time. And when you're a manager, you're getting paid percentages. So I knew going in that, you know, having a PR firm and doing, you know, PR and marketing, it is a little bit easier thing to do only because you are getting paid. You know, you sign a client, they pay for the month. And that's very different than, you know, I so much respect for managers, especially because sometimes they work for nothing for 2 years before they start seeing any money come in. And so that's just, you know, to be really fair towards what it is, a PR firm is easier to start than a management firm for that reason a lot of times. But the other is just, I was never obsessed with the money aspect of it. I always said, I'm going to work for super, super cheap, like literally like next to nothing. I think our first clients were like less than $200 a month. For the amount of work you were doing, it was just insane. But I needed to get my name out there, and I needed to show what I could do. So I did that, and after a couple of months, raised it, you know, and went from there. But yeah, so it was never about that. And there was that company that, even though it doesn't exist anymore, I won't name, but a friend of mine worked at this company, and they had 1,000 clients, and actually a little bit over 1,000 clients. And they were making, they were just grossing an enormous amount of money. And she quit after a couple of months and then, you know, said, yeah, we have all these clients. We have no people to handle them. People are super angry at us, constantly trying to get their money back because we're not, you know, we don't have the ability to do the work. And, you know, there's always a tiny part of you and you're like, oh my God, they're making so much money. And then immediately a much larger part of you being like, no, there's no way they can sustain this because they're not being fair. That's just not, it's not good business. It's not how you do it. And, you know, yeah, they made a lot of money probably in the first year or two until they completely shut down because they were doing awful, awful work. Actually, they were probably doing no work for most of their clients because they're not able to. They're signing anybody and promising the world. And for us, once we reached about 20 clients, we stopped. And to this day, we limit ourselves to 20 clients. And I every year I say we might, you know, hire some more people and grow into, you know, 25, 26 clients or so. But that's still, you know, we really like to keep a client to staff ratio. So when someone calls us, we're able to pick up the phone. It's a very personalized approach to everything that we do that's very different. So with having a successful, sustainable business over time, it's always about thinking of the client first and trying to do the best work you can possibly provide for that client at any given moment. And then knowing that over time, because it does take a long time, you know, you build your brand name and you know, people are happy with you and they send you more clients and then your reputation speaks for itself. But that's not something that happens overnight. And if you're money hungry from the get-go, you'll end up working with people who are not ready to be marketed. That's my nice way of saying, you know, some people don't have great music. Not everybody has good music. And you want to be able to take on the ones that are worthy and that are marketable and that won't burn your contacts when you pitch them. And that sometimes it's people with great music, but they don't have great personalities and you have to stay away from them too, no matter how much money they have. Because, you know, that's going to wear on you. You want to do what you love at the end of the day. So I'm very proud of the fact that we wake up in the morning and we really love what we do. I want my employees to wake up in the morning and come excited to go to work and work, you know, excited about the clients that they have. That's always a really, really important thing for me. So do what you love first. And I really do think that everything else follows.
That's great. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, you talked about this at the expo, just about how you make your clients kind of stand out with such an incredibly saturated market out there of, you know, musicians on social media and streaming, et cetera, like, you know, telling that story, like how do you differentiate your clients from the rest of the crowd?
I guess in short, there are two things we do in that. One is that we personalize everything we do. So even when you write a press release, we don't blast the press release out. We specifically do personalized pitches to every single person because every, you know, writing one person, you want to have a personalized relationship with them. And so you have to send a personalized pitch with the actual details and things that you want to achieve or, you know, what essentially you want from that person. And they're spending their time and money writing about you. So you have to make sure that you're giving them something that you know that their readers would want, that their listeners would want to hear. So that's an important aspect. The other is we differentiate all the clients by looking into what their story would be and how to make them different. So it goes back to what we're talking with thinking outside the box. So lifestyle branding is really, really important for us. It's when, you know, we're a music PR firm, so all our clients are musicians. But you want to make sure that you're focusing on not just on the fact that here's a great singer-songwriter or a great pop artist or a great rock band and getting them reviews, but also try to really focus on who the people are behind the music and beyond the music. What are their hobbies? What kind of nonprofit affiliations they might be interested in or might already be involved with, and highlight those types of stories in order to get them press outside of music-based publications as well. That's a really, really important thing.
And then do you feel, at what stage should an artist seek out a PR firm? Is it, you know, once they have a certain number of followers? Is it right out the gate? What's your take on that?
It really depends. I mean, obviously, PR is great to have once you have great music that's ready to be promoted. But there are a lot of things that go into play. Primarily, there are financial aspects that you have to worry about, because PR is not cheap. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure, at least good PR is not cheap, and you have to make sure that you are going to be maximizing on that. So I would say when you have, obviously, if you have a budget, that's great. But the first thing is always having great music, a great product to promote, and enoughness. So a single is not enough. A single will last you for a couple of months, but you want to make sure you have stuff afterwards as well, so you can keep pushing the content. You want to make sure that you're, you know, we primarily focus on performing artists. So we want to know that even if they're not ready to perform right the second, that they do have a plan to start performing in the next few months. So we can focus a lot on local press as well, you know, in terms of getting people out to review a show and doing all those kinds of things. You know, reaching out to local radio stations to do on-air performances or putting in event calendars. Because even though your music is your main product, you will be making the majority of your money through supplementary products, which is mainly shows and merchandise. And merchandise is sold at shows. So that show element is, the live element is really, really crucial in terms of you being able to make your money back and building a sustainable, successful career as a performing artist. You know, it doesn't, we have clients that pay us through their Spotify royalties, but at the end of the day, that's not for, you know, not every client is like that. And so playing shows usually, more often than not, is going to be the majority of your income. Again, touring and merchandising.
Yeah. And then I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit, just for, you know, educating our listeners, about, you know, there's a huge difference between advertising and PR. You know, and I think some people confuse the two.
Yeah, publicity, I like to say, is the form of convincing someone to give you something for free. Because with advertising, you're controlling the message. So yeah. I get to go out there and say, I am buying real estate in this magazine or in this blog, and I wanted to say, Hunter has the best music in the world. And, you know, obviously there are specific regulations of what you can and can't say, but for the most part, you can say whatever you want. And with publicity, you are pitching an editor, writer, journalist, and you want them to give an unbiased review that essentially recommends your music. It puts you in a positive light, recommends your music to the reader base and the listener base. And oftentimes, advertising can be dismissed as hype. So it could be a good way of getting someone's attention initially and supplementing everything that you're doing. But at the end of the day, you can't just rely on advertising. It's just another piece of the puzzle. Because you want, you know, the journalists and the editors and the writers to go back and say, yes, you have great music. And you want them to interview you, and you want them to be able to make you stand out and have you viewed in a positive light and create a lot of excitement about you, because that's a really important aspect as well. People want to be part of something that's happening, and people know that you can go out, you know, and just purchase advertisements. So again, having that is an important thing, especially with social media advertising, is an important element to make sure you're seen and that your content is seen. But it's not you can't replace PR with advertising.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you for explaining that. And I'm wondering now if you can also just talk a little bit about kind of how you see the landscape for music is changing so much, and how do you kind of manage that? How do you navigate that?
We try to navigate kind of with it. So, for example, we had, I'm trying to think how many years ago, at least probably 5 or 6 years ago, we saw social media as, you know, something. I mean, social media has always been important, but social media has become more and more complicated in terms of understanding algorithms, in terms of how your stuff is seen, and in terms of how people consume music and spread word of mouth through social media. So especially, you know, I started the company in the MySpace days, right when Facebook was kind of becoming more and more popular. So for the first few years, I would just tell clients, you know, this is something you should really do yourself. And as, again, those algorithms became more complicated, as things, as it became more important and there are really cool new ways to promote your music on social media, we opened the social media division. So now we have separate staff members working alongside the publicists who also do social media marketing. And, you know, there will be, I'm sure, other things along the way, and we'll try to kind of work around it and not work around it, but rather work with it and try new things, because I do think it's a really important thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And what's your take kind of on, you know, guerrilla campaigns, viral campaigns? I mean, I think sometimes people are under the impression that you can make something go viral.
Sometimes you can. I mean, we've had some really cool campaigns like that where, you know, a completely unknown band that's never gotten press before all of a sudden is on Billboard and getting millions of views and getting offers from record labels for deals. That's just the exception rather than the exception of the rule rather than the rule itself. So that's the, you know, important thing, because a lot of people look at it and go, oh yeah, that could be me. For a viral tool, I always say, what would make me forward it or share it even if I don't like the music? Like, what's an additional aspect to it that's so unique, that's so cool, that I would want to forward it no matter what, that I would really want to say, oh my God, so-and-so, you, like, check this out. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's a formula, if there was one, that's a formula for a viral tool, because people would want to share it and spread, you know, that's, viral is exponential growth. So how do you get one person to share it to three, and then each one of them share it to three people, and then you have nine, and then 27, and so on, and so on, and so on. So it's kind of about figuring that out, but don't ever put all your eggs in one basket. I spoke at right after AFF Expo, just 2 weeks ago, I went and I spoke to Nashville speak at Music Biz, and one of the panels was about playlisting. And, you know, it's a packed room because everybody thinks that playlisting is a holy grail. And yeah. I love the moderator of that panel so much. He put up a big slideshow and it basically said this. And I took a picture of it because, like, I have to show it to, you know, all my musician clients and friends. It said, playlisting is not a marketing plan, because it's such a great reminder that it could help you, but it's not the one thing. It's, again, there's no one holy grail. Yes, it's important. Yes, it's something everybody wants. But oftentimes you see someone get on a great playlist and without a solid foundation of fans really being there and supporting it, and you getting on more, and you releasing more music, and you playing shows, and you getting music reviews around it, without really, I mean, yes, you can utilize it to great, great things, but it doesn't make or break you on its own. It's not like you get on a large playlist and all of a sudden, you know, you're selling out arenas. And I know I'm giving you kind of, I mean, that's kind of a given when people, when you say it like that, but people often really just say, that's the one thing I'm going to focus on and nothing else. And it's not a good strategy, because it's just one more thing you should be doing, because it's an important aspect, but it's not the only thing you should be doing.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's such a great point. I think the other thing is there's just kind of this herd mentality, you know, and it's sort of like whatever seems to be popping right now. So it's like Spotify playlist, everybody trying to get on the Spotify playlist, or like Rap Caviar, you know what I mean? It's like, and so everybody moves over and like attacks the, you know, the curator for that playlist. And you're right. It's like immediately gets oversaturated, and immediately there's all this sort of like weight attached to it. Like if you get on this playlist, like your life is going to change overnight. And you're right. If you don't have the foundation, you know, it's really not going to be sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just because I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but if somebody wanted to get into music PR and they didn't have a music background or a music business background, is that a prereq, or what's your take?
First of all, I would say get an internship. So you have, you know, you can start learning from that. And I think different companies have different kind of things that they're looking for when they hire someone when they take someone up for an internship. With us, we definitely want people who are interested in music. And we generally accept people who do have, who are studying some form of communication. It's becomes harder for, especially because our internship program is so popular now. So we rather take on someone who is studying PR or marketing or sometimes even advertising, than take someone who's starting art history, but they really like music. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, even if that is your case, you will be able to find the internships to start there. And I keep saying internship because I think it is a great way of starting to understand, to learn about the business. I also think it's very hard to not have an internship, study music business, and immediately try to get a job, because you want to be able to show that you know how things work day to day in real life.
That's really good. Well, how do people find you? How do people get a hold of you and your amazing team?
They email us, or I mean, I guess people find me all. I think a lot of people who see me speak at panels message me on Instagram. So it's Hunter G. Scott. So okay. That's how I get a lot of people connected to me. But if you're trying to reach the company, we have a contact form on the website of lasamos.com, which is LASAMOS. Or if, I do get a lot of email myself. So if people do want to reach out directly to my email, it's just hunter@lasamos.com.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for your time today. This was such a great interview.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Grateful, grateful, grateful to Hunter Scott for making time out of his insanely busy schedule to speak to us all about his amazing career trajectory and to dispense advice and wisdom on everything that he has learned along the way. Again, you can find Hunter at lafamos.com, LAFAMOS.com, or email him at hunter@lafamos.com, or track him down on social media, Instagram, Twitter, etc. So thus ends another phenomenal episode, if I do say so myself, Hey, how'd you get that music job? Okay, shameless plug alert. My EP has finally dropped. It's called Diatribe. It is out now on all the streaming platforms, or you can go to my website, lariel-music.com. And check it out. Let me know what you think. I would love to actually hear what you guys think of it. I hope you like it. Again, it's a great collaboration with this amazing producer named Sound Control. So really proud of our little baby, and I hope you will enjoy it. So take good care. I hope everyone has a wonderful, productive, and blessed week. Remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you dare give up.